and delivered them into chains of darkness to be reserved for judgment, and did not spare the ancient world, but saved Noah, one of eight, a preacher of righteousness, bringing in the flood on the world of the ungodly, and turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemned them to destruction, making them an example to those who afterward would live ungodly, and delivered righteous Lot, who was oppressed with the filthy conduct of the wicked. For that righteous man dwelling among them tormented his righteous soul from day to day by seeing and hearing their lawless deeds. Then the Lord knows how to deliver the godly out of temptation and to reserve the unjust under punishment for the day of judgment, and especially those who walk according to the flesh in the lust of uncleanness and despise authority. They are presumptuous, self-willed. They are not afraid to speak evil of dignitaries. Whereas angels, who are greater in power and might, do not bring a reviling accusation against them before the Lord. I just wanted to point out how the Lord knows how to deliver the godly out of temptation, and how the righteous man, in verse 8, dwelling among them, tormented his righteous soul from day to day by seeing and hearing their lawless deeds. But my point is that God called Lot righteous. And for years, I really struggled with that. I really struggled with calling Lot righteous, because to me, he was a spoiled brat. And so, bearing in mind that God called him righteous, therefore, that's the end of the conversation. My opinion is now meaningless, just because I like beans on toast. And so now let's read a little bit about Abraham in Genesis 12. 13. We'll skip the how Abraham got all his wealth. Just want to remind you, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob got all of their wealth supernaturally. Although I admit Isaac got all his money from his dad. I was also reminded today that when Abraham got married the second time, remember his wife died and he got married when he was 126 years old, had another six kids, six or seven. Thought that was pretty impressive actually, but anyway, that's not the point. And then it says that he left all that he had to Isaac, and he gave things to his concubines and then sent them away. He sent them far away from Isaac. It's really interesting how he would not have, the Bible is very clear that Ishmael will have no inheritance with Isaac. No inheritance. And you know, Ishmael is the father of another religion. Does everybody know that? It's very clear, the Bible in the New Testament very clear says Ishmael will have no part of the inheritance of Isaac. Which is one of the reasons why there's always such a fight over Jerusalem, why there's such a fight over Israel, is God has declared this. And it's something that we need to bear in mind of the bigger picture. I'm going to talk about the bigger picture tonight. And some of the reasons why a lot of people are struggling, you know, we're coming into Christmas. Christmas can be the happiest and most miserable time of the year, depending on your situation. You know, if you're in a nice, strong, loving family, then it's one of the happiest times of the year. And if you're not, it's one of the most depressive times of the year because of loneliness and misery and all that stuff, you know. So the reason I'm saying that is because whenever you're struggling, whenever you're going through things, it's because you've lost the big picture. You've lost focus of what God is all about. God is not about you. And I think this is, we understand, you know, we can say, for God so loved the world. Okay, and then also we know that in Galatians 2:20, it says, when Paul says that, you know, it's no longer him that lives, but the life that he now lives in the flesh. He lives by the faith of the Son of God who died for me, who gave himself for me. So there is that personal reality that Jesus absolutely died for me. He didn't die for the world, he died for me. And so we have to bring this into the correct perspective, that if you feel insignificant, you must remember Jesus died for you. Not for the whole world. He died for you. But there's also a time when you must understand this is not about you. This is about him and his kingdom. And you are so irrelevant, he can do it without you. Or with you, if you like. Does everybody get me? Some of you aren't listening. Stop your eyes wandering around. Because if your eyes are wandering, your brain's probably following it. Now, I just want this to be clear. I want you to get this. This gospel is about changing nations. If what we live doesn't change our world, we're wrong. You got to get the big picture. Because as soon as you lose the big picture, you become myopic. And it's poor me and you don't understand and, oh, I'm going through this tough. And that's when you need to understand the big picture. So that's why I just felt the Lord speak to me tonight to speak the big picture again. Genesis 13, Abraham went up from Egypt, him and his wife, and all he had, and Lot was with him. And Abraham was very rich. Somebody say very rich. That's richer than I am, okay? He's very rich in livestock, silver, and gold. And he went on his journey from Bethel, etc., etc. I just want to touch on this moment. Now, let's read that, verse 3 again. And he went on his journey from the south as far as Bethel, in a place where his tent had been at the beginning between Bethel and Ai, to the place of the altar which he had made there at first. And there Abraham called on the name of the Lord. I want you to see this, how Abraham pitched his tent between Bethel and Ai. Now, it's very, I preached this a long time ago, but I want to touch on it again. Bethel literally means the house of God. Ai literally means a pile of rocks. And so many of us are caught in this situation where we are between the house of God and a pile of rocks. And a pile of rocks is absolutely no good. Don't matter how valuable the rocks are. We have to understand Bethel, the house of God. Abraham went back to where he first pitched his tent and where he first heard from God. That's what revival is all about. Revival is all about going back to that first place where you heard from God. Your testimony is so important, you must never forget it. When was the first time you heard from God? When was the first time you knew God spoke to you? These are important things you can't keep moving away from. And sometimes I used to get tired of telling my testimony. When I used to minister for Full Gospel Business, when I did it for several years, I must have ministered at 50 or 60 different breakfasts, banquets, and luncheons, and conferences, and I got tired of telling my testimony. It lost its power. It lost its effect because I kind of went into rote as I kind of began to tell it. You know what I'm saying? Yet it's a great story, man. God saved my life in a forest. He supernaturally came down from uninvited, if you like, and saved my life and took out a heart of stone and put in a heart of flesh. And from that day, I vowed to become a servant of God. From that is awesome. And if you forget that, if you can walk away from that, God, you can walk away from anything.
If you can walk away from that, you can walk away from a wife, you can walk away from kids, you can walk away from sanity, you can walk away from anything. If you can walk away from that moment, then you can walk away from anything. And we must never forget that moment, man. And there's times we've got to go back there and camp at that place and say, this is the house of God. This is what I must do for the rest of my life. Which is why I don't understand Christianity that's so half-baked. You know, why do I struggle with lukewarm people? Do I have that right? I'm not sure. You know, I struggle with this. Do I have the right to despise lukewarm people? I don't have the answer, but I had that question. Because why should I like God's vomit? There's serious questions. There's serious questions. There's times you've got to stop and you've got to ask yourself questions. And that, to me, that strikes me what Abraham was doing. He was asking himself the most vital question in his life. I told you before about when Wendy and I were hitchhiking from England to Jerusalem, and we were halfway in Bari on the east coast of Italy before we got the ferry across to Dubrovnik. When, I know I've told you the story, when we were offered a free trip home on a ship back to London, back to my hometown. And my knees buckled, my faith wavered, my confidence was shot, you know. Every single religious person, all through France, all through Italy, which had been about 2.5 months trip, more, nearer 3 months, 3 months, yeah. Every single religious person, bar none, had told us to go back to London because of Wendy's mother's bipolar mental condition and Wendy's grandmother, who I told you just before we left England, woke up one morning 90% blind and 90% deaf. And if we'd have gone back, we would have been enslaved in a system of good works, and we'd have never broken out into what God wanted for us. Somebody listening, and some of you in that place now, and I'm telling you, you have got to get the big picture or you are going to fail. Is this being recorded, Sarah? Well, I want a copy of it. You have got to get the big picture or you will fail, because the devil will offer you a free ride out of the pressure. Anybody hear what I just said? The devil will offer you a free ride out of the pressure back to your hometown, back to the Ur of Chaldees, back to your boat on the lake of Galilee. I'm telling you, man, you need to listen to what I'm prophesying tonight. Because this is serious stuff. It's as soon as you lose the picture, as soon as life is about you and your tent, and you're torn between a pile of rocks, which is all life is. We live in the greatest country in the world. It's a pile of rocks. Or there's Bethel, the house of God. And, to the place of the altar, which he had made there at first. I mean, that's what the cross is all about, mate. If ever there was a place of an altar. So verse 5, it says, Lot also, who went with Abraham, flocks and herds and tents. Now the land was not able to support them, that they might dwell together. For their possessions were so great, they could not dwell together, and there was strife between them. Now, I'm saying this is because this is a classic example of why the church in America has failed. Is because we've all prospered. We've prospered in this land, and we can't dwell together. And so we argue, the herdsmen argued, the shepherds argued. And so there's always a fight about this, that, and the other. I think nothing vexes the heart of God more than the fact that men and women of God can't work together. It's always been the bane of my life. Ever since that day I sat under that vine in Jerusalem and just shouted out, You know, you always find two little old ladies around the world working together. Why can't you find two little old men work together? Because we prosper. You see, and let me talk to young people. They're not necessarily young in the Lord or young in ministry or young in a revival. The Spirit of God has got a hold of you again. It makes you young again. And everyone's like submissive or whatever. You are not submissive until you have something to submit. If you're broke and you don't have a ministry, you've got nothing to submit. But when you begin to prosper and you have a ministry, now let's see how submissive you are. And that's what the future of God, that's what the future of our country is dependent on. Is how much can we, with something of value, something of worth, something tangible, suddenly bring that under the authority of God? Yeah, that's easy. That's why it never rarely happens. Verse 7, there was strife between the herdsmen of Abraham, livestock, of the herdsmen of Lot's livestock, the Canaanites, Perizzites, etc. So Abraham said to Lot, please, let there be no strife between you and me. So in other words, the older man said to the younger man, okay, you know, forget the strife. That's one good thing about when you get older. You may still have an unction, but you can't be bothered with the strife. But the trouble is, there's a time when there is strife, you have a choice. Should I strive to defeat the strife or just let it go? And the easiest route is let it go. So therefore, the peacemakers are lost. Can you hear me tonight? The peacemakers are... To be a peacemaker, you have to start a fight to end a fight. Does anybody understand that? That's what God did. He started a fight to end a fight. If we understood what Jesus did, man, that song, we'll never know how much it cost to see our sin upon. We will never know that answer. We can be in heaven for a million years and we'll never understand. We'll never understand why Jesus, righteous Jesus who knew no sin, became sin. He actually became sin. This is why it hurts my heart sometimes when people still think that they are sinners. Because if you are a sinner, of course you're a sinner before you got saved. The reality is if you are now a sinner and not a saint, then what did Jesus take then? What did he die for? Who was this Lamb of God? What did he take away? He took away nothing. He just took away, I don't know what he took away. If he didn't take away all of my sin, then who died on the cross? He became a snake, for God's sake. He became a serpent. Do you understand that? He became a serpent so that I can be free. And everybody in this world can be free. And then religion takes this revelation and grinds it to a do and don't program. And instead of realizing this is the greatest thing that ever happened in the history of mankind, that he who knew no sin took our sin once for all, forever, for eternity, never to be changed, never to be refuted. Great is the mystery of godliness. And we must fight for that. This is a fight. This is a war. And you're offended about you can't pay your bills. You're offended because some leadership said something to you. Get a life, man. Get a life. Stop being offended. If you're offended, go home. Go back to AI. Go live with a pile of rocks, man. Don't try to live around me. Not when I'm in this spirit. This is not a mood, it's a spirit.
let there be no strife. Verse 9, it's not the whole land before you. Please separate from me. If you take the left, I'll take the right. If you go right, I'll go left. And Lot lifted up his eyes and saw all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere. And then don't you love these parentheses? Before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. Oh, it was beautiful. Before the Lord changed Sodom and Gomorrah into a pile of rocks. You can go to this place, you know, in Israel. It's a pile of rocks. Anyway, I've seen it. Like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt. I mean, how beautiful was this? Then Lot chose for himself this righteous kid. Now, the reason I'm having to go here is for my own sanity, I think. Then Lot chose for himself all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated from each other. Now, the reason I'm saying this is, do you know how hard it is for some of us guys who have the heart of a father to love Lots? You know, when we say we love you, Lots, you really don't know what we're really saying. What we're really saying is, we love you, self-centered bunch of American brats. That's what we're actually saying. Do you get this? We love you, Lots and Lotesses. But he was still righteous. You see, he was righteous because of Abraham was righteous. Lot was righteous because of Abraham, not because of Lot. Like, I'm righteous, not because of Vaughn, but because of Jesus. And because he is the seed of righteous Abraham, he is righteous. And because I'm the seed of righteous Jesus, I'm righteous. I don't care whether you agree or not. I'm right, the whole world's wrong. Can you see this? This is why God calls you righteous, because you are the seed of righteous Abraham and, of course, the seed of righteous Jesus. It's so clear. Except religion. God, mate. And so, then the Lord, verse 14, Lord said to Abraham after Lot had separated from him, lift your eyes now and look from the place where you are. Northward, southward, eastward, westward, for all the land that you see, I will give you and your descendants forever. Don't worry about now. Stop looking at now. Now is going to end up a pile of rocks. Whatever your now problem is, I promise you it will be a pile of rocks any moment. So whatever your now problem is, stop it. Right? I'm preaching to myself. Don't worry. The point is as soon as you lose the vision of north, south, east, west, our descendants forever, as soon as you lose that vision, your vision becomes, wow, I think I'll have, you know what I'm saying? And there's the dilemma. That is the problem with Christianity in the Western world, is Christianity is presented to us as a choice of something that's choice, small picture, instead of a choice of everywhere, north, south, east, and west, and endless descendants for all of eternity. There is no choice unless you can't see it. So this is why we have to get the vision bigger. Each and every one of us needs to understand, and it's my responsibility. It's my responsibility more than Steve's. It's my responsibility more than any pastoral team. It's my responsibility to keep pressing in front of everybody the bigger picture of what we're about. And I'm not just talking about King's Fire International. I'm not just talking about that. I'm talking about the fact that the reason I'm so confident doing this is Sharon there, confirmed this, that she said that she had a phone call from Rodney Howard Brown today, and how Rodney just started preaching over the phone. You know, it was a business call, but before the business, she said she hit the speaker button and so that everyone else could come and listen. Rodney was preaching over the phone, you know. And because there's something so big happening that I don't really know what's going on. But this weekend I went down to Binghamton and I was stayed with an old friend of mine, Pastor Chris Scorinzi. Let me tell you how we met, and I want this to go on tape. And what it was he was so hungry for God. He was so hungry. He was going to a good church, Spirit-filled church, but he was so hungry for God, he didn't know what to do with it, you know? And he got so frustrated, like I did in 08. So frustrated that people are afraid of your frustration. But the frustration really isn't at anyone. It's at the fact that all I can see is a pile of rocks. All I can see is a fruitful plain, and it's not satisfying. Does anybody understand that? You staying with me, okay? All I could see was, you know, the church was growing, and the tithes were good, and it was driving me nuts. Because it wasn't reaching the north, the south, the east and west. It wasn't reaching out to descendants for all of eternity. It wasn't reaching that. So can you understand where I'm coming from? And this is what happened. This is what happens in marriages. This is what happens when you have children, natural children. You let the children become your focus. Of course they become your focus while they're little babies and they're suckling and they're helpless. You know, obviously like Jesus was when he was born and his mum and dad had pick him up and escape so he didn't get killed in Bethlehem. I understand that. But the reality is, if you haven't got the big picture, trust me, when you get married, when you have kids, your ministry will finish. Soon as you lose the big picture. Because the baby becomes the big picture. The spouse becomes the big picture. And when you have your first fight, your big picture ceases to exist and your life collapses. I mean, this is just life. And you lose all your money. You know, you're 29, for God's sake. What are you? What? This is America. Go out and lose another couple of million before you make your last 10. You know, it's small thinking. It's small picture thinking. You're still righteous. And it's the same as young men, young women, and their own ministry. You're still righteous, but you're being selfish. Can you see the difference there? This is why sometimes us Abrahams look out and all we see is a bunch of selfish kids, but we know you're still righteous. And you know how hard that is? Do you know how hard it is to communicate to people? Say, well, that's nice, but you're just a selfish brat, actually. Well, a righteous brat. But you got a small picture. You think of Rodney Howard Brown. Rodney Howard Brown is endlessly criticized about his vision. His vision is to win 100 million souls for Christ. His vision is $1 billion for the gospel. And all that happens is people criticize him because well, what happens to the people you lead to the Lord in these outreaches in these cities? Okay, so what's your answer? Well, you know, they have to be discipled. Okay, how many people have you led to the Lord and have you discipled this year? Oh, well, you see what I'm saying? You see the small picture? Stops the big picture? Of course we need to disciple them, of course we. But if by faith we keep the big picture, north, south, east, west, descendants, everywhere, forever. The big picture is what enables you to get through the small picture dilemmas, situations, problems, whatever the heck we call them. Anxieties, which means purely you don't pray enough. But anyway, that's not the point. Yes, it is. It's totally the point. So, stay with me, folks. The bigger the picture. This is a true story. I love this true story. Anybody ever heard of Paul Kruger? Paul Kruger was the first the leader of the South Africans at the turn of the century, not this century, the previous one. And Paul Kruger, the Boer Wars, I mean, it's of course world history, not American history, so we wouldn't know it, but sorry about the facetious comment, but it is true. And so Paul Kruger had this habit of every Sunday afternoon sitting on the stoop, the porch of his house, and anybody could come and talk to him, anybody, even though he was the leader of the country. And one young man come past and said, Paul, have you heard what they're saying about you in the London Times? No, what are they saying about me? And he told him, Paul, have they heard what they're saying about you in the New York Times? No, what are they saying about me? And he told me, he said. And after a while, Paul Kruger went, young man, what are they saying about you? He said, oh, nothing. He said, then you are nothing. If nobody's saying anything against you, you're nothing. You're nobody. You're so insignificant, nobody even knows you exist. You're so insignificant, you're so busy with your world, which will fit in my pocket, that if your world ceases to exist, nobody would even know. Because of smallness, peanuts, Sodom and Gomorrah, history, pile of rocks. Well, several thousand years ago, it used to be, was it around here somewhere. You see how small pictures are long-term failure and short-term disaster. So the reason I'm saying this is because I keep saying this, God's doing something great in the spirit, and I haven't got my finger on the pulse in detail. But when I know that when Mike Petzer was here and we were up there with Pastor Ernie, and there was Mike Petzer, Ernie Fink, Jerome Horsted, and me in the diner, and afterwards when Ernie and his wife Nancy drove away, she burst into tears and said, and the reason she said, you four guys could cast such a great net between you. And then Ernie began to talk about him and I working together, and Jerome and Mike, and this is just one little aspect. And Chris Scorinzi, who I met 25 years, he was so frustrated that he opened the Bible and went, Lord, speak to me. And he read it, the Gospel of Luke. And there was a donkey tied where two ways met. And he couldn't understand that. So anyway, the next day he said, Lord, speak to me, please. Gospel of Luke. And there was a donkey tied where two ways met. Man, what does this mean? He read the whole chapter and the chapter before and the chapter after, and he still couldn't get anything out of it. The next day he said, Lord, speak to me. Luke. And there was a donkey tied. Ah! You know, 3 days in a row. And then he goes to Full Gospel Businessmen's conference, 800 men. And there's somebody preaching there. And the preacher stood up and said, turn to the Gospel of Luke. And the text was, there was a donkey tied where two ways met. And he just about freaked out. And then during the middle of the meeting, the preacher said, and you, pointed right at Chris and said, you're that donkey where two ways meet. And he said he just about died that day. But that day he knew that he was never going to do anything but serve God, and that he needed to be cut loose from that hitching post, because and from that day on, that was it. That's a moment in your life where you have to go back where that altar is and say, this is the altar of the big picture. Doesn't matter the fact that my wife is having seizures, that I can't afford to pay the rent, that people in my city are talking about me because I'm too controversial, because God spoke to me and I have to stay in that reality. I have to lift up my eyes to the north, the south, the east and the west, and expect God to produce multitudes of descendants out of our lives.
And if you haven't got part of that, even if you don't know how to do it, if you don't say, I'm part of that, what makes us America such a great country is when we're out there on the other side of the world and there's pressure against us and everything. Man, when I was in British subjects, and I would never feel confident with a British passport going into a British embassy. Never. I never felt they'd back me up. I didn't. But when I became an American man, and I got my American passport out, and I walked up to that jarhead outside whatever embassy in the world I was in and went, let me in. Yes, sir, yes, sir. That's right. Open that blooming door for me while you're at it. Because I felt I was part of something great. I felt if there was a problem, we could call for the Marines. And when men like the president during the day of infamy after Pearl Harbor, when everyone's scared and worried, and he said the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. And then he began to say, "Fate, don't tell the Army, don't tell the Navy, and don't tell the Marines. Because the Marines don't know what losing is. The Marines don't know what quitting is." And that's what you're going to be part of. I'm proud to be part of this country. I thank God that I'm a United States of American citizen. And so we should all be. But how much more should we not be able to have something inside of us that rises up higher than any stars and stripes, anything that old glory has ever been able to show, and say, I'm a child of the King, that I am part, I am Abraham's seed, and we cannot fail because there's a great cloud of witnesses calling us champions. We're part of a bigger thing. We're part of a glorious thing that's been going on from eternity to eternity. That's what I'm part of. And until we get that in our spirits, we're going to fail. We end up some denomination, some nice church. God, I don't want to be a nice church. And if you're listening to this, I am the senior pastor. Or whatever. Do you know... I had lunch with Roy on Saturday. It was a great time in God. It really was. I don't know what we talked about. We talked about the kingdom of God. Roy used to live with Chris Gorenzi, who I've just been with all weekend. And Roy was like 12 or 13, whatever it was. And then Roy went back to his mum, and his mum, I don't want to get into details, it's not really our business, but... And the option was for Roy to come back and live with Chris, Pastor Chris. And he was counseled. Listen to this. He was advised. He had three daughters of his own, certain age. His wife was still suffering with seizures that she's pretty much grown out of it, thank God. But it was a great dilemma for them. He was pastoring a church that was newish. It was, you know, and it was controversial, and there were certain things going on in the church. And all of his leaders, or quasi-leaders as they were in those days, said, you can't take him in. You know, he's going to consume too much of your time, distract you from... And he's thinking about it, but, you know, what about this young kid? And he needs... whatever. And he's in the supermarket. He's in the supermarket with his trolley at the checkout. And he said there was a man in front of him about my size and about my age now, although Chris was a young man in his late 30s then. He said, and suddenly this man who had his back to Chris turned round and said, when I was your age, I took a young man in my house. And it was the best thing I ever did. And now that young man is my son, and his children are my grandchildren. It was the best thing I ever did, and turned back. How much does God love Roy to do that, man? How much does God see the big picture that one day this kid, This kid that may seem to be out of control. This kid that most people would write off and say he's too much trouble. He would send an angel or whoever that man was to turn around a Chris Carinzi in a public place and put his finger in his face and said, when I was your age, I took a chance and lifted up my eyes. Instead of looking up what was easier for me, instead of looking what would be fruitful for me, instead of looking, oh, that's a nice fruitful plane, he lifted up his eyes, and instead of that, birthed a descendant forever who's reaping a harvest around the world. Do you understand? When you keep your eyes lifted up to God, man, then what problem have you got? But it's up to us fathers to keep this in front of you. You know, get out of bed in the morning, will you? Just get out of bed in the morning. I don't care if you're tired. I don't care. You're young. Get out of bed in the morning. And if you're going to bed too late, stop it. Stop it. We're children of the day, not children of the night. I can give you 22 scriptures that says, and he rose early. I can't give you one that says, and he went to bed late. I mean, think about it, man. It's a distraction. You know why? You're thinking of yourself. You're thinking of, you got to stop it. In fact, tomorrow morning, you will be in the prayer meeting tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock. And if you're not, take a hike. Go to another church. Now, of course, if you're working, obviously, you can't do that. And I won't be there because I've got a breakfast meeting at 7 o'clock. But I'm telling you these things. And at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning is going to be our first Bible study. You've got to be there. You've got to be there. Now, of course, if you're working, you're not going to be there. You've got a job, you're not going to be there. I understand that. But you've got to start getting the big picture. Don't ever pray, Lord, use me. Become useful. And God will use you. Philip Smethurst has probably got the biggest. Within 10 years, he will have 200,000 square kilometers mapped out, detailed, every soul, every person, every man, every woman, every child, every AIDS victim, every orphan, everybody who's taken this vitamin, that vitamin, and he was, because in case you're English or American, it depends which you take. He's going to have that mapped out. He's going to probably have 25 to 30,000 pastors in his network. And we're wondering about what we're going to do with our lives. We're wondering if God's got a call on our life. Rodney, his ministry, 1.1 something million decisions for Jesus Christ in America in 1 year. No, 22 months, 23 months. Think about that. We are part of that. Do you understand what I'm saying? We are part of that. We are part of Overland Missions. We are part of Christian Life International, Ernie Fink's ministry that is reaching all kinds of networks in Ethiopia and Pakistan and outlying places all around the world. The Philippines, Andy Elms, he's got networks all around the world. Duncan Filmer, Mike Petzer, all these. Do you understand what I'm saying? When you begin to get the big picture of what's going on, and yet because it isn't all nicely tied up in a ball of string, we don't have the confidence that we're part of it. The kingdom doesn't work that way. The kingdom doesn't come with a bow and a package. Listen, Kingston and Newburgh is one vision, one understanding, unity of the spirit in the bond of peace. We need to understand this. Steve has invited Chris Carinzi to preach in Newburgh in January. Now, all these things are part of a bigger picture that you need to get, you need to grasp. I might be the only one who can see it that way. But that's the way it is. And the way it's going to be. And you watch, Steve and myself and many of us, things are going to begin to enlarge. But you know who's going to enlarge with it? Those who see it now. Later, all kinds of people are going to want to jump on the bandwagon. There'll be a righteous bunch of people. A bunch of righteous lots.
who are going to suddenly go, whoa, this looks fruitful. But from the beginning, get the big picture. God wants to use you. Did you hear, by the way, I think I sent you the email, James, about Thomas and Nellie had their baby. Did you get the news? It's great news. Did you get the news? Thomas and, well, you didn't, well, you know who Thomas and Nellie are, right? The pastors of the church there in Livingstone, Zambia. They had their baby this week, and they called him Isaac. It says because they caused them to laugh aloud, which is what Isaac means. And I want to encourage all of you. I want to encourage you to press into the things of God. I want you to really realize, why be at the prayer meeting in the morning? Because it's a corporate thing. The more people come together in the unity of the Spirit, of the bond of peace, the more we come together, the more we begin to see the bigger picture as we pray together, worship together, love together, do life together, laugh together. The more we do it, the easier it is to get through the crisis. But if all you're going to be is crisis orientated, you're not going to make it. So anyway, that's Abraham's viewpoint right now. I'm not calling anybody here a lot. Yes, I am. I'm done. Any questions? That's probably a stupid thing to say, but I said it anyway. Can you get this feeling? Don't you ever get this feeling? I told this story over the weekend, and I've told it here before. Of when I went to the ticker tape parade for the New York Giants. Has anybody not heard this story? I went with my son, and my two sons, and Josh. Of course, there's like close to a million people. She hasn't heard the story, so no, it's not that boring. There was close to a million people. A million. And they were cheering for the Giants. Now, last night, we went and watched the movie Invictus, you know, about Nelson Mandela and when the South African rugby team won the World Cup in 1995. And they were no way the favorites. They were about maybe fourth or fifth at best, maybe even less. And they won the World Cup. And, of course, this is one of the problems that we as a nation have never experienced since probably VE Day in 1945. VE is Victory in Europe Day, and then VJ Day came later, 1949, July the 14th. Oh, no. That's when I was born. VJ Day was a Victory in Japan Day, but the big day was the VE Day, Victory in Europe, when the whole country celebrated. Now, we as a nation, because we're isolationists, we don't have that experience because we don't compete in international sport. We don't. So we don't compete in international sport. If America won the World Cup in South Africa next year in 2010, half the country wouldn't even know. Well, these other countries... I was in England 1966 when we won the Soccer World Cup. I was 17 years old, one of the greatest days of my life. 50 million people threw a party. You know what that's like? That made the ticker tape parade in New York City look like, you know, afternoon tea with the vicar. A million, 50, the whole country partied, the whole country, because England had just beat the world of football. And so it was awesome to actually have, it's not like the Giants beat the Patriots. Yes, they did. Because Boston didn't celebrate, only New York. But when you win the World Cup, the whole country celebrates. And it's something we've never experienced. You see, when we win the World Series, it doesn't unify the country. In fact, it divides it. Right? So America doesn't understand when we win something. Now, you may point to 1980 or whatever it was when, you know, they won the hockey. But how many of us here really like hockey? Three. When was the last time? When was the last time you went to a hockey game? That's my point. Anyway, so, you know, it was we beat the Russians at hockey, and because we were looking to celebrate, but how many people like hockey? It's like way down the food chain on our sports list. It is. It's not America's game. It's Canada's game. Anyway, so my point is this, is that we really don't understand what happens when we all win. We don't get it. We culturally don't get it. But the Bible teaches it. That when somebody else's victory is your victory, because we're all part of that same big picture. And that's where we lack. Anyway, the point was about the ticker tape parade was, we're all, I mean, I'm like 10 deep. I didn't mind being at the back, obviously, I can see. About 10 deep, and about three in front of me is another big guy and his son, his teenage boy. And his son was taking pictures as like the preliminary sort of parade, you know, managers and owners and things that, yeah, nice job, mate, get out the way, you know. We're waiting to see Manning and the cup, you know. And so, and I remember this guy, he was going, did you get a picture of that, son? Was that a good picture? Nice, well done, boy, good, you know. Then suddenly the players turn up. And this guy went from I don't know how to describe the change, you know, the Jekyll and Hyde thing. Suddenly this guy saw them coming. And it was like he'd probably been a Giants fan. This is the first time the Giants have ever had a ticker tape parade in New York. It was their third Super Bowl win, but they never had ticker tape parades the other two wins because they deserted New York to go to New Jersey, right? But anyway, it's a long story. It's amazing what New Yorkers don't know about New York, but that's not the point. Listen to the Londoner, he knows. So, and they came down the ticket, and suddenly this guy went, champions! Champions! You are champions! And I'm watching the guy and going, yeah, we know that, mate. That's why we're here. What do you think we're doing? But there was something clicked eventually. After he did it to every single player, I began to get it. Ah, you're declaring the champions. What do you think the cloud of witnesses does? Do you think they sit there and go, oh, well done, chaps. Nice job, well done. Led someone to the Lord, eh? Good job. Overcome, have you? Oh, splendid. They don't do that. There's a cloud of witnesses watching you, and they're all going, yes. Champions! Conquerors! And we're all sitting around not able to pay our stupid phone bill. Can't get out of bed in the morning because we've lost the big picture. Well, if nothing else, it was good preaching.